This is Jewish Board Talk with Cherie Zifford, only on 101.9 High FM.
My guest now has been on Jewish Board Talk several times since the first show. He has spoken on topics as diverse as the Anglo-Boer War and Jews who fought in the World Wars, religion, anti-Semitism, including South African, the Jewish Board's involvement in the Snowy Smith case, Radio 786 case, and religious revisionism. He's also spoken on cultural and historical topics, including Tintin turning 90, Jews in the struggle, Jews in Grahamstown, and Sammy Mark's house. He's also spoken on how Israel is portrayed in the media. He's the editor of Jewish Affairs, the intellectual publication of the Jewish Board of Deputies, and I'm of course referring to my colleague David Sachs, who has just completed 27 years at the board, and the past 20 of them he's been the associate director. It is absolutely wonderful to speak to you, David. Welcome, and thanks so much for joining me.
Thanks, Cherise. Good to be back.
So, David, you have been my mentor and friend since I've been at the board, and you've given me guidance in every aspect of my work. Yeah. You've done so not only for me, but for all the professional and lay leaders. Today's your official last day at the board. What's going through your mind?
I don't know. I didn't think it would come to this. I thought I'd like work out my full period and then be put out to graze, like all the superannuated community members, community of professionals. But it didn't work out that way. I felt I'd come to the end and need to move on to other projects. Mostly, I want to pursue my second career in writing, which I've been doing as a sideline. Writing about history mostly, history of the community and its individuals. And I've been working on a project right now, so I hope to keep busy. And but I have very mixed feelings.
27 years is a long time. So you've also seen the progression of the Jewish Board of Deputies as it's reflected in the South African society, the change over to democracy and all the rest. Do you want to comment on that?
Yeah, well, my journey to the board has been, it's been over a quarter of a century of South Africa, how the story of South Africa has unfolded. When it started, it was late 1990s, 1997, and that was a kind of a honeymoon period. It was just after the fall of apartheid, and Mandela was in power, and everyone was being nice to each other. And there was hope in the air and positivity and optimism, despite there were problems. I mean, crime was out of control and so on. But it was a very positive time to be South African and to be a Jewish South African. And things got much progressively more difficult for the country and for the Jewish community, and it kind of culminated in the way that the elected government, the ruling party, turned on the Jewish people, really. Certainly, particularly post 7 October, but I mean, it's been going on for years beforehand. It's been getting progressively more in the camp of our enemies.
But hopefully, we see some optimism now.
Yeah, of course. And now you've seen a political, maybe not a revolution, but a very big shift towards hopefully a better direction. And really, really wish the board success in building a new kind of relationship with whatever government that emerges.
David, you have been our expert on anti-Semitism. There is no decision taken on anti-Semitism without you, and you give the definitive thought on it. I mentioned earlier the Snowy Smith case, the Radio 786 case, we've had the Mongani Masuka case. Again, reflecting back on your time here, how do you see anti-Semitism in this country?
I gradually got involved. I was more involved the cultural, historical, because the board has that kind of role. It does have a kind of a cultural, educational arm. I was more involved in that when I arrived, and I got gradually brought into the core work of combating anti-Semitism. You don't become an expert. I mean, I suppose you can study it, and there are places you can study it, and people learn a lot from that. I guess I learned about it just working with it on the ground. All kinds of different manifestations of anti-Jewish hostility and how to define it and what to do about it, and also to define why it's anti-Semitic, because people want to know, and whether or not to do anything about it. It was an education on the ground, a hands-on kind of education, which sometimes is the best way of getting to the heart of an issue, rather than learning about it from books or online or something.
David, there's often such a fine line, though, between what is acceptable. And I know yes, that I have come to you specifically with the media.
Yes.
And things that have been said on air, and we've debated them for hours, and I've always deferred to your knowledge and expertise. But there's often a very fine line.
Yeah, yeah. I suppose that's what makes it interesting, and it's not a perfect science. And there is a lot of subjectivity that comes into it. You know, there's certain things that really, really offend some people, and I can shrug it off. Other things get my goat to a greater degree, which other people don't react to so strongly. So, as I said, there is the subjectivity aspect, and one has to make a judgment call as to sometimes you might conclude, you know, this is offensive, this is insulting to Jews, but is it so bad as to necessitate action of some kind, whatever that action might take? So yeah, you have to make that decision. Is it worth the trouble? You know, do we want to expend our limited resources chasing down minor issues when there will be and are bigger ones to deal with? So that's all been part of, I suppose, the core work that I've been involved in, that the board is involved in, and it's made it interesting.
And reality is, David, I mean, you're not purely subjective. You work within a realm of academics, and your anti-Semitism reports are verified and fit into a global anti-Semitism report document.
No, absolutely. Fundamentally, it is based on facts and logic, and try to keep the emotion out of it as much as possible. Try to see how this would impact, or how would other communities react to the same thing, what's happening in that realm. But ultimately, once you've made all these logical, fact-based judgments and conclusions, you've come to those conclusions, but there is an element of subjectivity that often comes in. You just have to recognize that. And recognize that what basically means is you can't say, you know, this is the right way. But you can come close to a reasonably correct decision through thought and discussion, yeah.
David, I've always had a vague or slight interest in the military because my grandfather served in the Second World War.
Yeah.
But I didn't know the world of the Anglo-Boer War until I met you. And subsequent to that, I've become an enthusiast in that topic because your passion for that history and your knowledge for that history, I think, goes beyond anybody else's. Do you want to talk a little bit how you got into that?
Look, I wonder why. It's not that I'm military myself. I'd be a terrible soldier. I don't think I'd fit in the military at all. It's just not my personality. But it's a lifelong passion. And I started working for Museum Africa, which was my first job. It's a very big museum with an incredibly rich collection, you know, in terms of artifacts and photographs. And I think that really rekindled a childhood interest. And I started visiting historical sites, but particularly the ancient battlefields. And explore them myself. It was, I'd go twice a year at least, if I could, and very meaningful to me. Eventually, you know, once you've seen, walked over the same battlefields so many times, and there's nothing new to discover, and so I stopped going after a while, but it was a very important part of my life. And I wrote a lot on that just for fun, just because for the love of the topic.
And of course, you came up with the book Boere Jode.
Yes.
Jews in the Anglo-Boer War. How did you go about researching that?
Well, the initial research was done by, the core research was done by the former chief rabbi, actually. He was Louis Rabinowitz, who was a very fine secular scholar as well. And he made this one of his passions. And he interviewed people, he got corresponded. And that collection in the board's the SAJBD archives. I learned about it, and I started writing for the journal Jewish Affairs, I did an article on that. It was my writing for Jewish Affairs that actually brought me to the attention to the board and led to my appointment, my first appointment in 1997. And I actually just brought out the latest issue of Jewish Affairs now, today, as we speak. I managed to get out the newsletter just in time before leaving. And it's exactly 25 years since I took over as editor. So it's a mini milestone for me. The journal has been going since 1941, so...
So, we're going to talk about the journal too, but just before we do that, it's sometimes possible to marry passion and work. And I remember attending two Anglo-Boer events.
Yeah.
And they were quite highlights. They were great highlights of my recollections of work.
Isn't it wonderful? Yeah. Okay. and Ladysmith was the one.
Yes.
Yeah, I remember.
Do you
want to
just talk
there?
A little bit about the, what we were doing?
Okay, well, the book I wrote, it's a modest book. It's about, you know, the Boer Yoda, Jews in the Boer armed struggle or something in 1899, 1902. It made such a nice impact for a niche market publication. And it led to two monuments being put up to Jews who died in the war. One was the first Jew who died and was killed at one battlefield outside Ladysmith. And the other was to the other 13 or so who died. And my book led to that. The Ladysmith Historical Society contacted the board, and we collaborated, and we put up this little monument quite near to the mass grave, where all of the... Basically, they collected the remains of many of the Boer dead from around the battlefields around Ladysmith and buried them all in this ossuary. And a few of them were Jewish, as it happens. So that little monument... It came about through the book I wrote, and I was greatly honoured. I mean, it was one of the big honours of my life, I think. I mean, I never asked for it; it just came about. And yes, you were there. You know, my only regret is that they got the Hebrew back to front on the monument stone, because they don't know about right to left. So the names of the little inscription in Hebrew, and it's the only monument to the Boer War that's got a Hebrew. There's two, actually. There's the other one, and they've got the Hebrew back the right way around there, but here it's back to front, and I've always regretted that. Not that anybody's going to notice, apart from Jews, the occasional Jew.
David, it kind of reminds me of another story you told me with something that appeared in Hebrew that said absolutely something completely different to what people thought it said. Is that ringing a bell?
Was this the Southwest Africa story? This is a famous story about the tombstone in Southwest Africa. Yeah, it really happened, and it's no shame. It was a non-Jewish wife of a guy in a desert town in what was then Southwest Africa. And when he died, she wanted to put something Jewish on his grave, and she got some. There was a packet in the kitchen or something. Maybe it had been brought by Chabad, it wasn't Chabad, it was pre-Chabad, but whoever it was. And so she got them, it's Hebrew lettering, so she carved it, they had the stonemason carve it on the tombstone. So, yeah, so there was in the guy's name, and above him, Kosher LePesach. It's a true story. They eventually rubbed out the Hebrew lettering because it was people going there to have a laugh, and that wasn't nice.
No.
Although the local Jewish community was infuriated, said, who the hell are you to take away our heritage like this? But it did happen. We've got pictures.
Okay, David, Jewish Affairs.
Yeah.
25 years of editing Jewish Affairs, and we know this in your office. We refer to it as your baby.
Yeah. I think it would have been scrapped without years ago, because it's not really part of the core board business anymore. It started out as a bulletin, a kind of information bulletin. And this is, pre-WhatsApp, can you imagine? It was in the middle of World War II, and the community needed news and basic advice and reassurance from their leadership. So it was brought out as a kind of an information bulletin monthly, but it kind of mutated or evolved into a more general historical and cultural journal, and it survived up till now. It's only online, and we'll see if they'll carry on with it. I'm hoping they will, and just bring out a couple of issues a year. It's the only vehicle for the local Jewish community that to publish and read on topics in some kind of depth that have to do with important subjects like, and we just published one on the Jewish calendar, for example, but it's mostly about the history of this Jewish community and the people who made that history. And that's going to be a theme of the board's upcoming conference. And I can say our upcoming conference, because I'm going to be associated with the board for another 6 months at least on a part-time basis. A consulting basis. I can still say we and our. It's going to be very hard to, not be part of that family.
David, you've actually been a silent partner in Jewish Board Talk. Since I took over from Stephen, you have helped me with ideas, and often many of the ideas came from Jewish Affairs.
Yeah.
You've been a guest. You certainly helped me with wording right at the beginning. I think I had to run, like anything new I started at the board, I ran it past you.
Yeah.
In those 25 years, those articles in Jewish Affairs, I can think of articles about Jan Smuts that I've did articles, shows on, I've done sports people. What is your passion? What do you remember? Oh, we've got to mention our former colleague, Gwyn Robbins.
Gwyn Robbins, yeah, who was, one regret is I never made her the deputy editor because she was a de facto deputy editor all the way through. I mean, she's been an absolute marvel, both in terms of the things she's written, which have been great. I mean, she wrote about the last article but one that was about, you know, the Sephardi Jews. And I want to write about this for the Jewish Report as it happens. Because we think we're all from Lithuania or Latvia or maybe Germany, but you've got the Sephardim from Rhodes Island. So, I mean, you get people with obviously like Italian or sounding names, like, you know, Capelluto or Gaspari, or there's Benatar, of course, which is a well-known Sephardi Jewish name. And I grew up with some of these people. And Gwyn just wrote about how that came about. It was from the Congo. You know, I mean, there was the revolution in the Congo, and quite a lot of Sephardim came down here. And then some went to what is then Rhodesia, and... anyway, that's what Gwyn wrote. Okay, so what are we talking about?
Just your Jewish Affairs. What has struck you, dominant thoughts?
Oh yeah, yeah. Well, I think up until recently, at least, what I really liked to write about was not even the military history, because that was more an indulgence. I'm like Jewish military history, but I really liked to write about the Jewish anti-apartheid struggle activists, and we did a lot of that over the years. You know, about Arthur Goldreich, for example. Who was basically owned Lily's Leaf, and okay. So,
yeah. Can I?
Oh yes, yeah. That was one, for example. Sam Kahn, Herman Kallenbach, the Jews and the treason trial. There are many, many topics that I wrote about or published on over the years in Jewish Affairs. And as I said, that's actually what got me to the attention of the board in the first place. You know, if that's why it's an important vehicle, because you can get these stories told and recorded and used. I mean, they're quoted in overseas international journals. It's been the resource for serious research on the Jewish community. I hope that carries on.
Okay, David, Craig is saying we have got to wrap up, but then just from me to say thank you. I mean, we didn't get on to Tintin, and we've been officers alongside each other. We know each other pretty well at this point, having listened in on each other's telephone calls. Well, at least I do on yours. I don't know if you have been doing the same to me. You don't have to answer that.
Well, yes, I have.
And it'll be strange to walk down the corridor and not have you there, but it's reassuring to know that you will still be our consultant for the next 6 months at least.
Yeah. And Cherise, you've been thanking me a lot. I've got to thank you for you've been a wonderful colleague and an even better friend, and very well done on how you've grown in the position. Have you announced that you're the new National Associate Director?
I have not, but there
you haven't
have
told
it.
Them. Well, okay, so you're my successor, and so well deserved. And I can tell you've been acting that capacity de facto for quite some time now. So it's great to see how you've developed in your role, and great to just keep going.
Yeah, I'm still good. And that is my colleague David Sachs, who has leaving the board after 27 years, but not really totally leaving it. That makes me at least a little bit happy. So thank you so much for joining me, David Sachs. And also, you will be my guest again when your new books come out.
Of course, yes. I don't want to say what it is, but I'm telling you it'll be of a lot of interest, more beyond our Jewish community. Please God it happens. But
I can't wait.